Spain's recent win at the Euros this year has given it its fourth championship. More than any other country in Europe, this has been a rather dramatic turnaround for this country because three of them came in the last 15 years and have helped this country really earn its name as an international powerhouse. The first one, though, came a lot earlier. In between that first one and 2008, there was a very long drought, suffering, disappointment year after year. This first one came all the way back in 1964. It was the second edition of the Euro Cup. Spain opted out of the first one in 1960, even though it had an excellent team and probably could have won. Franco was a bit nervous about losing and suspicious of the event. He also didn't want the Spanish players to have to play in the Soviet Union. In 1964, Spain decided to participate, in part because the Final Four was going to be played in Spain. This was very good news for a country that was trying to open up to the world and gain acceptance. It was especially good news for the Franco regime. The format back then for the tournament was different. The early rounds were spread out over months. There were two game matches, one in each country. And then the final four was played in one country, in this case, Spain. So you would have two semifinals. One was in Madrid's Bernabeu, the stadium there. And the other semifinal was in Barcelona's Camp Nou. And then the final would be in Madrid, in the Santiago Bernabeu. And the consolation match for third place would be played in Barcelona. Spain would eventually win by defeating the Soviets in the final 2-1 in a hard-fought match. There was a lot of pressure on Franco not to screw up and lose to his arch rivals, politically that is, on home turf. The pressure was so great that they even considered different possibilities about affecting the performance of the opponents. One possibly was to drug them a little bit so they would be slower and things like that. But apparently none of that happened. It was a true game, fair and square, and the Spanish won. And when I was learning about this, a little bit more detail about this this tournament, I learned that there was an additional complication that arose which had nothing to do with the game other than the fact that this heinous act was supposed to have taken place or was going to take place during the games. And it was something that was much more deadly. And it just so happened that at that time, there was a plot to kill Franco by setting off a bomb. This was actually one of many that would be planned during his life. None of them were successful. And this time, the perpetrator was on paper an unexpected suspect, a man from Scotland named Stuart Christie, an anarchist. Anarchists are big, traditionally big fans of using bombs, and they have a bad historical reputation for assassinations. Now, the problem is that story isn't exactly true, at least part of it. And the reason is Christie was arrested on August 11th, 1964, when he had just arrived in Madrid for the first time. The Euro Cup had taken place on June 20th, so we're talking many, many weeks before that. So the dates don't add up. What happened then? Well, as I began to investigate further, I noticed that other sources claimed that the terrorist attack, the assassination attempt, was supposed to happen during the final of the Copa del Generalísimo. This is actually the Copa del Rey, the King's Cup, which is an annual tournament that has been played in Spain since 1902. And it includes teams from all over the country, not just La Liga, the first division teams, but also second division teams, and I believe second division B teams. So there's always sort of a Cinderella story. Anyway, since there was no monarchy during this period, it wasn't called the King's Cup, but the Generalissimo Cup in honor of Franco. These are sort of the things that dictators like to do. The King's Cup has lost some of its prestige in the last 20 years, but it's still a good opportunity for the more modest teams to take home a title. In any event, the game that we are talking about, the final in 1964 between Zaragoza and Atletico de Madrid, was played on July 5th, basically a whole month before Christie supposedly arrived in Spain. Zaragoza won that game, by the way. It was their first title of the Copa del Rey. So this was puzzling because just about every source associated this man, Stuart Christie, with a plot to kill Franco, and most of them associated that plot with a football game, and yet he wasn't arrested until after both of the games were played. So what happened? Who was this guy that the Spanish history books sometimes described as the Tartan Kamikaze? He was the son of what he described as a hard-drinking trawler man and a hairdresser. His father left the family when he was just six, so Christie was raised by his mother and grandmother, and it was thanks to this grandma, the gran as he would call her, that he was instilled with a passion for social justice and anarchism. He left school at 14, and then he moved to England to take up work as a sheet metal apprentice. And it was there that he met exiled Spaniards and joined them in their quest to overthrow the Spanish dictator. These exiles would send Christie to Madrid by way of Paris with the express instructions to assassinate General Franco, no less. That's quite a tall order there. Christie was about 18 then, and he told his granny that he was going to Europe to pick grapes, go to the grape harvest, probably make some money there. And he made his way down to Spain by hitchhiking. He picked up the stash in Paris, which was 1 kilo of plastic explosives, and he taped them to his body and concealed them with a woolly jumper that his grandma had knitted for him. And the idea was that he would get to Spain, apparently go to a cafe or someplace like that, and have a bandage on his hand, which was sort of the sign that he was the person who he was, and he'd wait for an accomplice to approach him with a question. The person was supposed to say, "What's up? How's the hand? Does it hurt?" And he would reply to that, "It doesn't hurt." And then the stranger would begin to speak Spanish, and then he was supposed to interrupt and say, "I'm German." And that would confirm that they were who they said they were, and they would make the exchange. And after that, Christie was supposed to return to France. However, on his arrival in Madrid in August of 1964, his card was already marked, and the Spanish secret police were aware of his arrival and were expecting him. He made it first to Barcelona, then hitchhiked to Vallecas, which is a town outside of Madrid, and then he got all the way to the Puerta del Sol, the heart of Madrid. He bought some cigarettes there and had a coffee, and it's probably here that he met his contact in Madrid, another anarchist and anti-Franco activist named Francisco Carvalho. Then he headed for the American Express office to collect some instructions. Now, this office was located near the Parliament building. I remember exactly where it was back in the day when you wanted to cash traveler's checks or wire money, or more importantly, receive money from parents and things like that. That was the place to go. I know it's closed. It's no longer there. I don't know when they closed it, but I think it was a while ago, but it certainly brings back memories when I hear about it. At the American Express office, it soon became clear to him that he had fallen into a trap, and he tried to flee. He made it to the street, but both him and Caraballo were caught by authorities. The Spanish press reported that Christie was a member of the Glasgow Federation of Anarchists, and he was detained for being caught with various items of bomb-making equipment. And that was true. He did have it on himself. After signing a confession, he was sentenced to death by the Spanish courts, which would have been the Garrote Vil, a horrible way to be executed. But international appeals and the UK managed to have his sentence commuted to 20 years in prison. And he was sent to the famous or infamous Carabanchel prison on the western edge of Madrid. It was sort of a hub for political prisoners for nearly 50 years. And there, Christie also met other foreigners who were there for similar reasons. But surprisingly, out of those 20 years, remarkably, he only ended up serving 3.5. He was released after the government listened to various appeals for clemency. Some of them probably came from the government, but apparently legend has it that it was his mother's pleas in letters to Franco that softened the dictator's heart. Franco apparently said, how could he deny the mother? Anyway, I think the fact that he was a foreigner also had a big impact. I'm not sure if he would have had the same sort of sympathy for a Spaniard. Anyway, Christie would return to the UK where he would continue his activity as an anarchist, but he would also try his hand at writing, publishing several books, the most famous being My Gran Made Me an Anarchist. And it was followed by other books like Franco Made Me a Terrorist. And he enjoyed some success with these works. Christie was apparently faithful to his principles throughout his life, and he died in 2020, in August of 2020, of lung cancer. So in the end, what was the connection with the games, which everyone keeps talking about? Well, it seems that Carvalho, Francisco Carvalho, was the one who possessed at least some explosives since May of that year, and he was planning to blow up Franco at the final of the Copa del Generalísimo, when Franco was arriving at the stadium, not the Euro Cup. But then he backed out in the end because he didn't think he could pull it off, and that was probably a good decision because it would have been difficult. A month later, Christie appeared and was going to give him more explosives, but they were detained. And that's the relationship between football, Franco, and the Scotsman. The tartan terrorist, or the tartan kamikaze, as they called him, unapologetic about his plot to kill. It failed, but he felt it succeeded in bringing attention to the situation of the political prisoners in Spain, and especially in the Carabanchel prison, and the reality of Franco, who was sort of trying to pass himself off as a generally decent guy on the world stage, who was acting in the best interest of Spain. And we all know that that was pretty much very inaccurate, to put it lightly. And that will be all for another podcast brought to you by Brian's Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link on our website. You can also check us out on our YouTube channel and support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.